Hello, Mars family.
Hi.
Hi.
Oh, you two are legends in this town.
This is the Extra Hot Grape Podcast, episode 260 for the week of July 22nd, 2019. I am Terrible Pizza Toppings, David T. Cole, and I'm here with Desk Bugger, Sarah D. Bunting.
Y'all cussers, please enunciate.
Quacking Comrade, Tara Ariano.
Quack!
And Inept Murderhead, Catherine Van Arendonk.
You guys, who killed Lily Kane?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Extra Hot Grape. Before we get into the meat of this episode, I want to tell you, for our Patreon supporters, starting next week, that is with episode 261, we will be putting ad-free versions of these Mothership Extra Hot Grape podcasts on your Patreon feed. So if you are a Patreon, that feed can be your one-stop shop for all your ad-free Extra Hot Grape listening needs. And that's it. On with the show.
On with the show. Okay, so we as a culture had been prepared for the Veronica Mars season 4 episode dump to take place on July 26th. You will note that that date has not yet occurred. Hulu surprised us by releasing the fourth season a week early last Friday, July 19th. While we greatly regret that my co-host on the late Go Pirates podcast, John Ramos, was not able to join us, we are so thrilled and grateful that Vulture's Catherine Van Arendonk could make more time to discuss the return of Neptune's tiny, mighty cynic to the TV landscape. Hello again, Catherine.
Hello.
Hello.
Yay.
Yay. Yay.
Catherine, we will link to your review on Vulture in our show notes, but can you talk a little bit to start us off about your expectations going into the fourth season and whether these new episodes met them, exceeded them?
Before you do that, let's warn our listeners, we will be talking about the whole season. So if you haven't finished watching all of the episodes, be warned that there will be rampant spoilers. Okay, Catherine, proceed.
Spoilers ahoy.
Yes, rampant spoilers. So I, like many people, did contribute to the Kickstarter that made the movie. because, you know, look, it was a young, naive, innocent time. And I was really curious how this fourth season was going to either continue the vibe of that movie, which is unbelievably fan service-y, or whether it was going to sort of take a different tack. I have to admit that at this point I was like, you know what? I think most revivals are bad. I kind of wish this one wasn't here. I'm ready to move on with my life. And, you know, I still think that's like a reasonable, just general way to approach the world, given how most revivals work. But I watched, they had originally sent out the first two or three episodes, and before they sent out the whole season. I watched the first two episodes where Logan walks out of the ocean looking like he does.
His Casino Royale moment.
Yeah. And where it really, really felt, I mean, like the Veronica Keith stuff was absolutely on point. It was as close as the show has been to like what the first season felt like, I think, in a lot of ways. Like the noir stuff, which really slipped in seasons 2 and 3, was really back in. And I gotta say, even though I know the ending made a ton of people mad and I have like hours of feelings about the end, I was impressed with it. I am happy that it exists. And I think it's one of the best like revival seasons of anything that I have seen.
Can I just butt in with a sort of non-fan perspective and then I'll slink away? Because
sure.
I was never really into Veronica Mars. I never watched the original. And then I think I watched the movie and then I've seen episodes here and there. But it wasn't like my show when it was out.
Yeah.
The mystery of this season was enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
I felt everything about it seemed not effortless, but didn't seem effortful. Like it wasn't trying too hard to, except for maybe Patton Oswalt's friends on Skype, the Murderheads. But I found like as a detective story with some great characters to watch that I had a lot of fun watching this season. And I can't believe I'm saying this. This is the first time I think I've ever said this about a streaming show. It seemed like the perfect length.
Yes. Yeah, I also liked it. I mean, I haven't revisited this series since it was on, but I do think that part of the reason this revival works better than some others that have felt very unnecessary to me, like Gilmore Girls, is that the procedural element gives it something else to do versus just like, look, here they are again, you know what I mean? Often the case. And I think, you know, what I've seen on Twitter is like people are mad about the idea, especially in your post that just went up that we'll link to, Catherine, where Rob Thomas was saying like that, you know, the mystery element is important, like maybe more so than the character stuff or whatever, like that people are mad about that. But I agree. Like, I think that does give you something else to hang your hat on. And this especially like reconfigures the show. Like, it really makes her more of a Magnum PI than, you know, like a high school girl, and kind of repositions it as more of a workplace show, which is always what it kind of was, even when she was in high school. But, I liked it for that reason.
Yeah.
It didn't feel extraneous.
Same. I mean, I think that, you know, you always had this sort of, in the original incarnation, you had this dichotomy is a little lofty, but like, I think the pitch versus its actual strengths, there were some differences, and it actually was very good at process, at the procedural part of it. But I think that's maybe not necessarily how people thought about it or came to think about it. And I did rewatch the movie in the last couple of weeks. It has not held up terribly well. Like, for what it's for, it's fine. And you just have to keep in mind what and whom it was for. But this feels like what I wanted the movie to have been.
Yeah.
And I was surprised at the ending, but also gratified that they, you know, it was overdue, in my opinion, and I was gratified that they finally went there and in a very permanent fashion. Like, of course my husband, who having been a soap opera actor, perhaps it was colored by that experience, but he's like, well, we didn't really see the body. I'm like, well, I think the body was probably picked up with a sponge, but
can I ask, because it sounded like there's a lot of agreement there, like, why was that overdue? Because when I was watching it and it happened, I was like, that seemed really tacked on and unnecessary based on everything else that happened. Like, I don't care that we're in spoilers, right? We already did all that.
Yeah.
Okay, so Logan at the end, he got spotted. And I know they set it up with that stupid riddle. And God, Criminal Mastermind, stop doing riddles.
Yeah,
really.
No.
Anyways, he blows up. And I was like, well, that seemed unnecessary. It seemed like at the end of the process of writing it, somebody decided that there needed to be a moment. And then that was as much as they had time for. It didn't really seem to be building to it in a meaningful way.
I have two major feelings about the Logan death. The first one is that when I watched it, I was like, oh, this is a good idea. And that is coming out of sort of my earlier fandom of the show and the sense that, like, Veronica Mars has always been a really sad person, and the point of her is that she is deeply traumatized.
Yeah.
And that it is much truer to what this show feels like, that she would be in a place where, like, she doesn't get to get happily married. That's, like, not who this character is. And so as soon as that happened, I was like, okay, yes, this makes sense. She shouldn't be married to her high school boyfriend. She has never really been able to grow up. This season is really about her inability, like the fact that she couldn't grow up and everyone else around her was. And this is a really good way of permanently severing that relationship so that she can move on, so that the show can move on, so that like everything right. about this is going to be just done now. And I think it worked thematically, even though I agree with you, it totally came out of the last like 10 minutes, and I might have preferred if it happened earlier, if it like he died, but then she still had to find the bomber sort of a situation.
Right.
You know, in spite of that, it works, I feel, thematically with the show, because so much of the season was about Veronica and us as viewers having to grapple with the fact that, like, yeah, we're nostalgic for this place and we love it, but also it's always sucked. It's always been a terrible yeah. place. You know, it's no one's ever been able to be happy there in Veronica's life. And so that makes a lot of sense that the key figure in that nostalgia would also die in a giant car bomb. I will say though that after talking with Rob Thomas about it, I actually came away feeling slightly less happy with it. That's a whole different sort of conversation. But just within the show itself, without any extraneous stuff, I think that's, for me, why that did not feel unexpected
so
or wrong.
In order for us, the Veronica Mars fans, to be happy, Veronica Mars has to be miserable. Is that what we're saying? Because poor
yes.
girl. Okay.
Well, right. it's genre appropriate.
Yeah.
The show has always struggled, I think, with the like two Veronica Marses that mm-hmm. we yeah. have. Like, there's the one who's sort of in Veronica Mars like PI work mode, and then there's the schmoopier one that she is behind closed doors with Logan. And I was never quite content with, like, it just, she just seemed to be a different enough person in her sort of private interactions with Logan that I just didn't feel like it was meshing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was time for the show to pick, like, is this show Veronica Mars PI, or is the show, you know, LOVE? Ugh.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
And it picked, whether everyone agrees that it made the right choice, I don't know, but I,
yeah,
if this is going to be a noir, he, you know, some aspect of her happiness must go, and it
right. I mean,
it should be that.
In the second last episode, when she accepted his proposal, I turned to Dave and was like, "Well, he's going to die in the finale."
Yeah,
but I mean, for like, it's kind of tropey, you know. But the other, for also for arc reasons, like in the finale, either Logan had to die or Keith had to die. And I mean, imagine like how mad people are at Logan dying. If Keith had died, people would yeah. be apoplectic. Like,
yeah,
yeah.
I would
yeah.
be
yeah.
in definitely the street with signs, yeah. plural.
They made the choice that was correct. And especially since they were, you know, spent the season kind of building the red herring of like Keith is having, you know, Keith has dementia or something is happening with him neurologically and he's losing a step and, you know, blah, 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 that ends up not being the case. Like, did it end kind of neatly? I guess. I mean, these things do happen. Like, I bought it. But I'm with Sarah. Like, I have my own personal problems with Jason Doring, but I also didn't buy that. And I also thought, like, I would like to talk a little bit about Logan's portrayal this season, because it seemed very weird to me. And I know part of it is that, you know, a big thread for him going through the season was that he's in therapy and he's trying to control his anger. And I get that. But the result for me was like the choices that were being made seemed like, do you guys remember the episode of Black Mirror, Be Right Back, with Donald Gleason and mm-hmm. Haley Atwell, where he dies and she like basically remakes him as a robot that like kind of learns what he was like from his social
yes.
media posts? Like,
yes.
to me,
yes.
that was Logan this season. Like, he just seemed so robotic and weird. And I know that it was like because he was supposed to be so controlled, but for that reason, the only time I really bought them as a couple was like when they were having actual love scenes. And that might just be because she had enough chemistry for both of them.
Mm-hmm.
Just me.
I had some issues with the fact that they were having these sort of meta conversations about their relationship and mm-hmm. who he was being in it.
Right.
Like, you kind of have to believe that since we're dropped in medias res, that these conversations would have been occurring whether we were watching them or not.
Mm-hmm.
And I did not believe that. Like, I didn't find 5 years post-movie, and leaving aside how credible I found various catalysts in the movie, spoiler, not very, this seemed like, why are these events occurring except that we are now witnessing them? And that can't feel like it's the only reason. So that was a quibble, but I guess it doesn't matter.
Yeah, for me, some of those conversations made a little bit of sense just because they had sort of written him as constantly being gone. And there is a thing when you're like have a semi-long distance relationship that whenever you're together, you have these conversations that like are like, what is the state of this relationship? And so I guess that played a little bit more plausible to me, but it does make... It does make it hard to feel like you're really in a lived-in relationship when they sit down on the sofa and they're like, let's watch Hulu's Harlots.
Yeah. As you do.
Mm-hmm. Lots of people do. I totally believe Logan is a harlot's head. I mean, I think that I buy that for that character just every day, all day long.
Sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think, that... Whatever you feel about their relationship, the bigger question is the fairness or not, I guess, of killing this beloved fan, beloved character entirely so that you can make the next season be the thing that you want it to be, which is, by the way, very different than the show has always been. I mean, which is basically what he has been fairly clear in conversations about being his point. And I, as much as I love that the move and think it's a good move for the show and for Veronica, I started to, like, the more I started to think about it, the more I then was like, well, I just really hope season 5 is good, because he basically tried to do this already once with season 3. Like, basically, the idea of season 3 was to reboot the show in a new place where she had new friends and new relationships. And as we all know, season 3 of Veronica Mars is famously beloved by everyone. So it worked great. And so if that's the goal once again, it's not that I'm not here for it, but I don't have proof of concept yet, you know, that it will actually work the way he wants it to. I think the other issue is that by putting so much pressure on it as a bridge, you're actually conversely emptying out the meaning of the event itself, right? You're like, I gotta get rid of him and now it's done. And I sort of wish that the point of it would have been to kill Logan and not to kill Logan so that these other things can happen.
I mean, anyhow, I think it can be both, though, and I think it probably is both.
It totally, because, totally can.
You know,
yeah.
If Logan had just, like, been, shipped off to, like, troubled kid, like, Hudson University, basically, at the beginning of season 3, then we might be having a very different conversation about where the show had ended up, leaving aside, and, like, I've written about this for Vulture several times, the difficulties of transitioning a high school show into college, which Veronica Mars did actually better than most. Not that that's saying much. But, you know, trying to cut ties with beloved characters is, you know, it's a gamble. How did everyone feel about how various other regulars were or were not used? Like Weevil, Wallace, was everyone sort of content with those levels?
Yeah. I liked the parade of ex-boyfriends who are in prison. I thought that was a nice little bit. I liked Leo, because every time Max Greenfield is on my screen, I go like, oh my God, how is it possible for a person to have that much charisma? It's not human. It like defies the laws of physics, what he
does. Even low key, Leo is Max Greenfield is still so good.
How does it happen?
When we used to live in LA, I lived near this place called this was like his lunchtime haunt, so he must live in the area. He was always working on his computer, like doing screenplays or, you know, writing or whatever he was doing. And as he was typing, he had this like stupid, funny grin on his face all the time. So even when he's by himself working, he's got typewriter charisma. So it's genuine.
Oh my God. Oh my God. That's best. Amazing. That's fantastic. That brings joy to my heart. Thank you. I liked them. I think the show has not really spent any time or energy rethinking what it does with its non-white characters and what that maybe should have been rethought about. It definitely does not seem to have felt like it was at all troubling to want to have to put like agents of violence and chaos in the show, who are, by the way, brown people. And also all of the brown people are criminals. Well, not all, because there is also this fantastic role by Kirby Baptiste Howell as the owner. Kyle Baptiste, thank you, as the owner of Comrade Quacks. But like, there is still this element of the show that you're like, are we still doing cartel guy stories? That's what we're still doing that? Okay.
Whole thing. Ooh.
Yes, it was not great, but I did appreciate that they were not the main big bads and neither were Weevil. Like, I sort of felt
true.
They were portrayed in a way that was like they are also victims of the system that Big Dick is at the top of.
Yeah.
Which felt purposeful to me.
Not at the head of? Come on.
Sarah.
Sorry.
I think actually one of my very favorite things about the season is how smart it is about like gentrification and the way it manages to work that theme through the noir of it, through Veronica's life, through her and her father's detective agency, through all of these old characters. It makes so much sense from where the show has always been. It makes sense to bring it back now. It feels like it's getting little Trump jabs in there, but without it being at all stupid and obvious, like it's just the reality of what's going on. I think that was something it worked Comrade Quacks in there really nicely. And it reminded me of like my favorite things about like beach noir when it really works, like Terriers, you know, it's that same sense of the rich and the development and what happens to everyone else. That was a very successful part of this season.
Yeah, and related to that, ancillary to that, was the J.K. Simmons character, Clyde, who manufactures a kind of prison meet cute with Big Dick. And then, like, it's similar to in Out of Sight, the George Clooney, Albert Brooks relationship there, where it's, you know, the idea is that the actual con is going to, like, ride this whale out into respectability when they get out of prison, and he ends up getting sort of unclear how much he was willing to do criminal stuff, like, you know, going along to get along versus for actual nefarious reasons in Clyde's case. But I liked the portrayal of that character too, that there was a little bit of thoughtfulness about what life is like for people who have been incarcerated and, you know, what maybe just because I've also just finished watching all of season 7 of Orange is the New Black. And so that's on my mind. Mm-hmm. But at the end of it, when like, you know, Clyde comes back to Keith's office and is like, well, it's all over. Let's hang out. And I was like, why can't they? Like, I realize that's ridiculous, but also at the same time, why can't they?
It was like web series. Come on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tara, do you want me to run down a checklist of ways in which I personally felt seen and make sure that it matches up with yours?
I have 5 items on my list, so yeah, go ahead.
Okay. That the credits are reminiscent of True Detective. The presence of Keith Morrison.
Wait, isn't Amy Mann singing the theme song now?
Oh, is she?
It's Chrissy Hynde.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was Amy Mann. Okay, never mind. Proceed.
The, you know, Keith Morrison, obviously, like just the murder heads and how closely that whole, storyline, like, you know, that's just life covering true crime. But, that Patton Oswalt's first wife was such a, you know, that she like basically dove into Reddit and solved this case posthumously that he was in the center of that storyline, with that having been in his life for however many years, was pretty cool, I thought. There was one other thing. He's convinced JonBenet Ramsey was killed by an owl.
Yep.
Hi. Way to fold so many things that I know about into that. And there was also some character named McNaughton. The Manhattan rule is basically, you know, the dividing line for legal insanity. So I thought that was cool. And, you know, Clemens, I love that guy. Did I miss anything?
Yeah, the kid from American Vandal who tried to mug her.
Oh, right. Yeah. R.I.P. American Vandal.
I know. He showed up and my husband was like, why do I know that kid? And I was like, I'm about to blow your mind. And indeed, he was like, what? It was fantastic. That was a good little bit.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, I have to say, as my final thought, I care way more that the show burned Nicole, the Kirby Hal Baptiste character, than that they exploded Logan in terms of showing forward. I wish I thought she would have a part in the show going on, but I don't, which is a bummer because she was great.
Fantastic. Why couldn't they be buddy cops together?
Exactly. Transition from Magnum PI to Simon and Simon. It's so easy.
Do we think that Veronica is going to, if there's a season 5, is she going to be in Neptune, and should she be?
I think she won't and she shouldn't. It does feel like we're done with this now. It's not the same town in a fundamental way. And I think that's correct.
Yeah, I think I agree that she should not. I think in addition to the fact that she shouldn't, I think Rob Thomas has begun to make noises that he wants it to be like an Agatha Christie style. Everyone's in a house and somebody dies
That's fun. Which
I would be into.
Sounds cheap also. So Hulu might appreciate that.
That's right.
As long as Leo can parachute in, I'm with it.
Are you talking about Hulu Home Apart?
Yes.
It is time to go around the dial. First up, Tara Ariano.
I will keep this brief because it's hard to talk about it without like spoiling what makes it so special. But Frankenstein's Monsters, Monster, Frankenstein on Netflix. We watched it this weekend. You may have read about this. The idea is that David Harbour, the star of Stranger Things, is in this concept. Is the third in a line of actors, and his father, David Harbour Jr., at some point in what looks to be the 80s, wrote a play for television called Frankenstein's Monsters, Monster, Frankenstein. But he was very confused about exactly what he was doing, kept dropping character, was like sort of this Orson Welles weird figure. And so David Harbour, his son, is now many years later trying to reconstruct like what happened with this production that it's implied like made him lose his mind, and has an amazing cast. I think his name is Michael Azarov who played Phillips. Russian son on The Americans is like Frankenstein / Frankenstein's actor. It's hard to explain. Kate Berlant, Michael Lerner, many others. It's so funny and weird and dumb. It's pitched for such a narrow, like such a small number of people that will appreciate like the weird inside show busyness of it. It's written by John Levenstein, who was the showrunner on Kroll Show and also wrote on Arrested Development and Silicon Valley and many, 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 many other shows. It's hilarious and weird. I don't think Dave liked it as much as I did, but I thought it was hilarious. And if it doesn't make, and that's how I got into Juilliard, a catchphrase, I don't know what will. Dave, go ahead.
No, I did enjoy it. My problem was knowing the pedigree of the show, I was expecting something different. So it took my brain, you know, half the show to sort of like recombobulate itself to its frequency. You know, if you hear things like Arrested Development and Kroll Show and all this, you get, you know, an idea in your head. I would say it's like closer to something like Steve Coogan would do.
Oh, yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
If you approach it that way, it's actually like it's structured really great. It's stupid in all the right ways. You're talking about Orson Welles. It has like the Orson Welles Peas commercial parody going on in it. So it's got a lot of stuff to like. It's just like it was a matter of expectations versus reality for me. And I just had to like get into it first. But I didn't. Yeah. I enjoyed it. I definitely did not enjoy it as much as you did, but it's good.
I enjoyed it a lot. It's a similar kind of like non sequitur. Like, why does this exist? I mean, I guess I'm glad it does because it made me laugh, but I don't understand why anyone paid money for this. similar to the Bash Brothers experience in terms of like, what a time to be alive for something like this to even happen. God bless everybody who did it.
Yes. Netflix as patron.
Yes. It's also on Netflix. Thank you, Dave. For my plugs, I have two. Our friend Dave Chen of Slash Film and formerly of the Cast of Kings podcast with Joanna Robinson has a new podcast called Culturally Relevant. You can find it online. Obviously, you can find Culturally Relevant podcasts wherever you get podcasts or go to culturallyrelevantshow.com. I'm going to be on it next week talking about the finale of Big Little Lies. So strip in for this. I also wrote something about The Handmaid's Tale show versus book and sort of, you know, trying to guess at what sort of bridges there may be between the show and the upcoming Margaret Atwood novel, The Testaments, which is a sequel to The Handmaid's Tale book. And you can find that at Barnes & Noble's blog, but I will also link to it in the show notes.
Very good. All right, Catherine, your turn.
My turn. I have been recapping Jane the Virgin since the first episode of season 2.
Oh, boy.
So this ending of this show is hitting me pretty hard, and I have seen now the screeners for the last 2 episodes. They're really, really good. I cried a great, great deal, now I need to write my 76th recap of this show. I have missed one episode since season 2 because I had a baby that week.
Wow, what a slacker.
I know. And I'm having a hard time pulling it together, but it's going to be fine. But if you are in the same boat as I am, there will be stuff out from me next week when the show ends. Certainly there will be the recap. Depending on whether I manage to get my shit together, there may also be a whole, like, this show meant a lot to me essay. And then I am also doing a fairly long conversation with the showrunner, Jenny Snyder-Ehrman, which is also going to go up as like a whole big in conversation thing to go with the finale. So there will be ways for you to process, but there are no ways for me to process because I have to process it, which is too hard. Anyhow, so that's me for next week. This is a longer scale plug kind of thing because it's for a thing that doesn't really exist yet. And it has kind of a story to it, but I'll keep it short. On my podcast, Appointment Television, which I do with my friends Andrew Cunningham and Margaret Wilson, Andrew and I have been sort of willing into existence a podcast about the TV show Bones. We don't know why. We don't know why that is the thing that stuck in our head. But at some point, it became one of those fictional things that, like, maybe was real. Andrew made key art for it. And then we did one episode for our 200th episode of Appointment Television. We instead made the pilot of The Bone Zone. Andrew decided that we were not going to make any more episodes of The Bone Zone unless somehow we could get Bones showrunner Hart Hansen to acknowledge its existence in any way. I told Andrew that bar was way too low and he did not believe me.
Nope.
And so
right.
I was right because we did manage to goad Hart Hansen into saying, and I quote, "Wait, what's happening? Looks cool." So
on Twitter.
Yes. So after Andrew has a baby, which is going to happen imminently, at some point we will be making a short, probably 13-ish episode season of The Bone Zone. We have not yet picked which Bones episodes we are going to cover. So if you have favorites, please come find me on Twitter and tell us what your favorite episodes are. We're also looking to have guests, by the way. So as a reply, like, you know, I made time in my schedule to be here today, you guys. And so if any of you have any interest in being on the Bones Zone.
Yeah, collect that favor, man. We are here.
I don't know why the Bone Zone is the thing that my friend Andrew has focused all of his soon to be parent anxiety into, but he did.
How much of your traffic do you think is going to be because you're producing an excellent podcast, and how much of it is going to be SEO?
We, you know what? The thing about a passion project is that we're just operating out there, you know, however it goes,
Here's the first review on iTunes. I started listening to this podcast because I thought I was going to be about erect penises, but it turns out about some show on Fox. So I watched a show on Fox. I thoroughly enjoyed myself. 5 stars.
Fantastic. We'll take it. Love
a bit that gets out of hand. Yep, we will link to all of this in our show notes. And yes. Catherine is at @KVanAaron on Twitter if you want to hit her up with recommendations for Bones episodes that they must not miss.
And or gentle ribbing. Sorry.
No.
All right, Sarah, redeem yourself.
That won't be possible, as we all know. I'd like to talk about Last Chance U. The show returned for season 4 last Friday on Netflix. It's back at Independence Community College in Kansas for a second go-round. It is clear early on, based on how much time we're spending on off-the-field drama, that this is not going to go quite the same mostly heartening way we've seen in previous seasons, and it doesn't. This show is like the Bosch of unscripted recommendations for me. I'm always banging on about it, but I do think that it gives real insight into the underclasses created by college loans, by the NCAA's quote system, that its quote workers actually, you know, basically slaves resent but need to survive, hypocritical concussion protocols. My perspective as a one semester old college instructor, obviously light years away from what junior college educators are confronting. I'm teaching students about TV. These teachers are trying to give their students basic life skills and prevent CTE from setting in when their charges are still 19. But I do like how much we see of the teachers and the deals that they have to make with various devils in the athletics department, and how much money that brings in for the whole school, and with trying to find ways to get kids like a 59.5 in, you know, comp 2 so that they can go get concussions at a D1 school and maybe have a shot at getting concussions at the NFL and support a family. In season 4, I extra like Kalen Davis, star of the defense and absolute charisma bomb. When we meet him in the first episode of the season, he is showing off his Wonder Woman bedspread.
No,
do not deny yourself the charms of KD, listeners. Last Chance U, all 4 seasons are on Netflix right now. But if you want to just start in with season KD, I recommend. He also has an air freshener collection. He's amazing. For my plug, I was thrilled to sub in on David Roth and Jeb Lund's Hallmark podcast, Dave and Jeb Aren't Mean, to talk about a 2016 film called Love in Paradise, which stars Luke Perry and a bunch of agreeable British Columbians. Usually when I guest on that podcast, it's more like Sarah and Jeb are super mean, especially Sarah, but this movie was actually pretty damn cute, I have to say.
That's nice.
And that episode should hit as you're listening to this tomorrow. So Thursday the 25th. That's Dave and Jeb Aren't Mean.
All right. I got a whole bunch of things, so strap in. First of all, correction from last week's MFK episode.
Oh, yeah.
I totally screwed up the Star Trek one. I had conflated 2 characters into 1 character, Mr. Holm and the Traveler. So they're 2 separate characters. The guy that was presented as one of my choices is not the guy that takes Wesley Crusher out of the universe to the thanks of a grateful Starfleet. That was a different character. It doesn't really change my answer, but in my defense, those 2 characters kind of are, you know, both big, tall, giant kind of characters. So my bad. Sorry, all you Star Trek people out there. Second thing, the Big Little Lies finale. I don't really want to go into like the Big Little Lies as a, you know, cultural product. I just want to say there is a scene where Renata goes apeshit at Starbucks because the barista asks if she wants cream in her Americano. And then like all the stuff online, like, yeah, you tell them. It's like, look, the Americano.
Eve
Beatty. That's right. It was Eve Beatty on. Yeah, her too. Anyways, listen up, Eve et al. The Americano was like created because, you know, Americans that were fighting, you know, fighting the Germans in Italy just like couldn't take an espresso. So they just like took an espresso and they diluted it. So it was like kind of the same strength as a cup of Joe back home. And you put sugar and cream in a cup of Joe. So it's perfectly acceptable to put into the an Americano. You might not like it. You might like your coffee black. But some of us like their coffee, try to make it taste as much like candy as possible. So that means lots of cream and lots of sweetener. Anyway, so Big Little Lies, thanks for demonizing those of us who like to dress up their Americano. You are monsters. Also, Meryl Streep is pretty good this season, but otherwise unnecessary. Follow up on The Rook. We talked about The Rook like three episodes ago, and I was saying the show seemed super dull, but then I heard that the book it was based off was super fun, and then I bought the book. I've read the book. I've actually already into the sequel. It is pretty fun. It is nothing like the TV show at all. The book is so like weird. It's like it's a spy story, but via X-Files, if Douglas Adams sort of wrote it, like it's that kind of vibe to it. It's like weird, fanciful. Oh, and then in The Rook, I just want to, for those longtime listeners of the podcast, there is a throwaway paragraph when they're talking about all the weird shit that's happened in the organization's past, that once upon a time, they came across a vampire, I think it was in the 1700s or 1800s, that spent his time cornering the world's wheat market, which is so close to the plot of NBC's Dracula. Like, kind of got to think that this guy was a Dracula fan. Anyways, last bit is on Patreon this week. Our subject is, what would Extra Hot Great be if we were recording in 1999? So everybody is going to bring their rundown of a show for a week they choose in 1999. What's going to be the canon? You know, what are the winner and losers, et cetera, et cetera. So that is this week on Extra, Extra Hot Great.
Hello. This topic comes to us from Leanna. She submitted the canon on Hilda. She calls it, "And You Can Tell Everybody This Is Your Song," and writes, "Which TV character deserves their own theme song, and what would that theme song be? I could not narrow it down to one. I have three. So why don't we start with Sarah?"
Well, initially, I was casting about, obviously, for a theme song for Dorothy Zbornak, but then somehow, I don't exactly know how my synapses connected all this up, but I decided that both Fleabag and Claire need a little bit of Rockin' Donna's goodness in their lives based on their various unfulfilling adventures with dudes in both seasons. So, Dave, could you just play a clip? I really can't think of anyone who deserves that glorious guitar bridge more than Fleabag and Claire. So that's what I went with. Who's next?
Love it. Dave, why don't you go next?
Okay. My choice is both a theme song for this character and a memorial. This is a 500-view song on YouTube from Singleton's Dairy, which I believe is in the UK. Let's hear it.
Cheddar, cheddar, a national treasure. You smoke your cheese flavor, delivers pure pleasure. Grated you grooved, toasted you tasty. If I said you're the best, please don't think me too hasty. You're the big cheese, the chocolate, please. You're destined to please me. I'm begging for cheddar, so please just release me. Cheddar cheese,
oh boy.
Cause I love you. Cheddar cheese.
R.I.P. Cheddar the Corgi from Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
As I mentioned, I've been watching a lot of Jane the Virgin and thinking a lot about Jane the Virgin lately. And I was thinking in particular about their villain, Sinrostro, Rose, who, man, she just keeps coming back, doesn't she? She never seemed to quite get rid of her. But I was also thinking about Veronica Mars and early seasons of Veronica Mars, in which she gets up and sings this song for karaoke. And I was like, that would be a great... That would be a great theme song for Sinrostro, and so I have chosen Blondie's One Way or Another. One Way or Another.
As sung by Veronica Mars.
Yes, absolutely. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Love it. Okay, as I said, I got greedy. I have three. Why don't we play them in this order? Dave, please play Lydia.
Then I met an Englishman. Oh, he said. Won't you walk up and down my spine? It makes me feel strangely alive. I said, in these shoes, I doubt you'd survive. I said, honey, let's do it.
Obviously, that is for Lydia from One Day at a Time. And I picked that verse because I feel like it encapsulates her dynamic with Leslie Berkowitz. Very sub-dom. I also picked this one. Dave, please play Brooke.
You can justify what happens now, 'cause how could you have known? Leave the dust to dust and say amen, but sorry on the stone.
Naturally, if I'm going with Amy Mann's Brother's Keeper, and I've already noted it's for Brooke, this is for Brooke from the other two, literally her Brother's Keeper. Although now he is on his own. We'll see how that goes in season two, because thank God we're getting one. And finally, Dave, please play Debbie.
We learned a lesson from the start.
Now, I realize that Madonna wrote and released Jump before Glow existed on Netflix, but could that not be more written for Debbie on Glow? Come on now.
Yeah. Love it.
So those are my picks. Thank you, Leanna, for the topic. That was fun.
Yeah, it was fun.
It is time for the canon, presenting this week our own Tara.
Thank you. I'm presenting season one, episode 5 of Netflix's One Day at a Time, called Strays. At first, Strays seems like it may visit familiar, if not threadbare, sitcom territory. Penelope's boss, Dr. Berkowitz, played by the great Stephen Tobolowsky, is having a birthday. Since he's lonely, and also to cover her co-worker's uselessness, Penelope ends up throwing him a party at her apartment. But then things take kind of a serious turn. And here is what I think makes this episode remarkable. Number one. It makes good use of the multicam format. The birthday plot is, as I said, not necessarily brand new for a sitcom, but what puts it over is the comic timing of the cast and their ability to play off the audience, as we hear in clip one.
Now listen, this is a very sweet and lonely guy. I've seen him riding a tandem bicycle by himself. are we ready? Are we ready?
No. Espérate, espérate. Ay, ay. Dale.
On the podcast, you can't see Lydia smack herself on both cheeks and pose in preparation for Dr. Berkowitz's entrance, but you can hear how much the live studio audience loves it. Honestly, this show makes me feel like any work Rita Moreno does on film without a live audience is a waste of her gifts. Here she is bringing out Dr. Berkowitz's cake. Clip two.
Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday
to just me.
Just a reminder, this lady is 87 and still has the pins of a Broadway dancer. She is a queen. Number two, New Schneider is a fox. A sight gag about making everyone feel at home in Penelope's apartment involves Schneider coming out of their shower in just a towel. Well, two, there's also one on his head. Doesn't translate to an audio format, but is pleasing to my eye. Number three, it's realistic in its portrayal of Penelope and Lydia's different reactions to Alana's very close relationship with Carmen. Prior to this episode, Penelope has made some very momly jokes about Alana's friend Carmen's goth style, but otherwise doesn't seem to have an issue with her hanging out so much at the apartment. In Strays, though, both Penelope and Lydia start to allow themselves a little concern about how close Carmen and Alana are, to the point where the girls seem unable to spend any time apart. As a modern woman, Penelope tries not to admit that she'd be upset if Alana and Carmen were literally girlfriends, and particularly doesn't want to admit it in front of Lydia, who doesn't scruple to say that she's not okay with it. Clip three.
Mommy, I am serious, okay? Carmen gets straight A's. All they do is study.
Pero still, that friendship is a little bit, ¿cómo se dice? Intense.
They're teenage girls.
No. I think there's something a little bit queer.
Oh, I don't even think you know what that word means.
Oh, I know.
You know that you said the same thing about me and Kathy Trecker? Because we started sharing clothes and we both wanted to marry Ricky Martin.
See? Queer.
Turns out that Alana and Carmen's desperate need to be together is not at all romantic, but this also is not a dead issue, and as the season continues, we'll retrospectively appreciate how the subject was addressed, starting in Strays, particularly as Penelope's own honest feelings about sexuality evolve. Number four, it takes a side on the question of undocumented immigration. Alana gets in trouble when Carmen, who has not been permitted to stay for the party, chooses the wrong time to try to sneak back into the kitchen window. When she has sent Carmen away again and Alana to her room, Penelope explains the incident by saying that the girls have been working on an immigration project. As it happens, a couple of Penelope's guests have personal stories to tell on the subject. Clip four.
Immigration project? Why haven't they come to me?
Why would they go to you?
Oh, boy. Well, there's no stopping now.
What's happening?
I immigrated here illegally. I'm a Canadian. Shocking, I know. Oh, I thought you were all going to do that.
So, you're an illegal alien?
Well, we prefer undocumented. But yeah, born in the Couve, overstayed my student visa, forced to live in the shadows of Pepperdine University. Took me a while to get rid of the accent, but now I can say, I am sorry about that.
Wow. You must have been very brave, Schneider, coming here with everything. Knowing only the entire language and struggling to unlearn the metric system.
I sense a liter of sarcasm.
This is not an uncommon story, unfortunately for Schneider. He's rich. The reason he's the super is that his father owns the building, so his lawyer took care of it for him. Lydia's story is quite different, as we hear in clip five.
If you want to hear a real immigration story,
Havana, 1962. I came here as a child, fleeing an oppressive regime with only my natural charm and perfect legs.
Here she goes.
And you know, it was written that I was Cuba's greatest dancer.
Whoa, who wrote that?
Just because I wrote it doesn't mean it wasn't true.
I bet you were fabulous.
Oh, completamente. And then Castro, La Revolución, the Catholic Church had a program called Pedro Pan that invited the Cuban children to come over, and they gave us our papers. And I RSVP'd, yes. It's my little joke. There was no RSVP.
This version of the story that Lydia tells is, as any reasonable person would assume, sanitized for the enjoyment of the privileged party guests and hardly encompasses the full scope of what she went through. But Scott, Penelope's fellow nurse, is an idiot with opinions he feels everyone needs to hear in clip six.
Oh, that's great. At least you did it the right way.
Oh, Scott, don't ruin the night by being you.
Just being honest, there's a right way and a wrong way, and a lot of people are doing it the wrong way.
How come when people say I'm just being honest, something terrible always comes next? You know, it's never like, hey, I'm just being honest. You look hot.
I said that to you once. You got mad at me.
Because it was in the workplace. Do you understand anything?
So I can say it now?
Technically, but don't.
Such stimulating dinner party repartee.
Anyway, what's so wrong about saying people should follow the rules? You want to come to America? Get in line.
Oh, the one that's 10 years long, full of hardworking people that'll do jobs that some Americans won't do, like picking fruit or remembering to buy balloons and a cake for a birthday party?
I'm so sorry.
It's just the country's full up. Like a bar. It was free before 8 p.m., but now you gotta pay a cover. Sorry, but we can't just take everybody.
El Bobo is right. What? Everyone should follow the rules. I did. Snyder did.
I did not, actually. A lot of lawyers, a lot of fines.
Mommy, seriously? What you went through was terrible. But at least you had a place to go and you were welcomed with open arms. I mean, there are persecuted people all around the world who would love the opportunity to come here, but they can't because the rules are different for different people. So some of them break the law, and they do what they have to do to fight for better lives for themselves and their families. And you know what? I get it.
Those three perspectives are advanced within less than 3 minutes and leave the viewer in no doubt as to the position the show is taking. It would be nice if every immigrant followed the rules, but often circumstances don't allow it, and also a lot of the rules are bad. Penelope's commitment to her correct opinion is about to be tested with a real-world situation, though. On to point five. The episode tells an immigration story from the perspective of people of color. If you are unfortunate enough to be connected to people on social media or in your real life who bitch about the social justice warriors imposing diversity via cultural Marxism, you already know there are ignorant dickheads around who don't understand the importance of giving people from minority and marginalized communities a platform to share their experiences. There's a huge difference between, for example, a season one episode of Beverly Hills 90210 that parachutes in Carla to be a non-white person who's witnessed a crime and needs to be sheltered by a Latina maid until after she testifies, and the mid-season finale of The Fosters 2 years ago in which a DACA recipient targeted by ICE agents seeks literal sanctuary in a church. It's the difference between a show where your EP is Aaron Spelling and one where your EP is Jennifer Lopez. Plus a difference of 25 years, but still you get what I'm saying. Back to this episode. The reason Carmen's been around so much is not that she and Elena are in love. Clip 7.
Carmen's in my room right now.
What? Elena?
She has nowhere else to go.
What are you talking about? Where are her parents?
Mexico? They were deported.
Penelope gets rid of everyone and goes to get the rest of the story, which is that Carmen's father went to a medical clinic that serves undocumented residents and was picked up at a checkpoint on the way back. Some perspective, this episode hit Netflix in January of 2017, so it would have been both written and filmed during the second Obama administration. Therefore, it's not a commentary on the immigration policies of President Trump. Barack Obama was known during his presidency as the deporter-in-chief. Also, undocumented people are ineligible for health insurance under the ACA, and the struggles of healthcare providers to serve this community are covered in an excellent documentary called Clinica de Migrantes, which you can find on HBO Go. Digression over, please play clip 8.
So, the immigration project.
I am the immigration project.
Carmen and Elena had thought they'd be able to keep this scheme going for a year so that Carmen, who was born in the U.S. and has never been to Mexico, could graduate with their class. Clip 9.
My parents didn't do anything wrong. They both work two jobs. I'm on scholarship at St. B's and I get good grades. We're a normal American family. We had tickets to see Frozen on Ice.
You like Frozen?
Sometimes the skaters fall.
It's so important that the show lets "my parents didn't do anything wrong" stand. Not even Lydia, who minutes earlier was agreeing with Scott that people should follow the rules, appears to disagree. As an immigrant, she understands, as he does not, that what one might advocate or hope for in the abstract may not be applicable in Carmen's reality. Carmen's parents were contributing non-citizens, like virtually all undocumented people are. Restrictions on immigration are dumb and generally racist. Anyway, arrangements are made to get Carmen to Austin so that she can live with her brother. Schneider plays an instrumental role. Clip 10.
Thanks for taking me to the airport and for buying the ticket.
God bless white guilt. Or is it Canadian goodness?
A little of both, eh?
Damn it!
Carmen's goodbyes to all the women of the Alvarez family would be heartbreaking even if the situation that required them wasn't an injustice. But it is, and given these characters' place in the world at this point in history, we and they both may sense that this isn't the last time they're going to have to send off someone they love for such a shitty reason. All that said, point six, it's funny. Even in the midst of Carmen and Elena confessing the extent of their deception, there are jokes. Clip 11.
When did this happen?
2 weeks ago.
2 weeks? So have you been staying here this whole time?
Yeah. Most nights after dinner, I leave and I sneak back up through the fire escape.
Oh, are you the raccoon?
We also get a cute moment of teenage drama queeniness instantly deflating in clip 12.
They said I'm supposed to go to my brother's in Texas.
Well, then I think that's what you need to do, Carmen.
No, Mom, Texas? The worst place on the planet? He lives in Austin.
Austin!
Actually, I hear Austin's pretty chill.
The first season of One Day at a Time brings us storylines involving the physical and psychological injuries veterans face, the challenges of dealing with VA, what happens when a family member comes out, and why a Latinx woman might be wary of accepting an advantage that comes from an initiative to increase diversity in academics. Strays is the episode that made me trust, as each of those came up, that One Day at a Time was being steered by people who were sincere and capable in their desire to sneak important stories into a sweet family sitcom. I'm so glad they did, and I hope you'll agree that this pivotal episode belongs in the canon. We should start with Catherine, because she picked it off the list.
I like it so much.
Oh.
I feel like, you know, I was curious. It's been a while since I watched the first season of this show. And so when I was thinking back about, like, okay, if I was going to pick a One Day at a Time episode to be in the canon, which one would it be? And I was thinking about sort of the end of the first season with the whole Quinceañera episode, which I think
it's
for
in.
Me was, but yeah, right, already, I know. So it's like, for me, that's the one where I was like, okay, that's the thing that really defined that show for me. There's also the depression episode. There is the episode where she sits next to the phone waiting to get her benefits from the VA. Like, there are all of these different moments on this show that you could sort of point to as being like the really important ones to pull out. And I had sort of forgotten that this is the one, that this episode, which happened so early in the first season, was already doing all of that kind of stuff. But I think for me, revisiting it and thinking about it, it manages to bring up all of these things and to demonstrate a skill that the show then uses over and over again later in the series, which is that it can bring in all of these different viewpoints without it sounding like that. I mean, I like the Carmichael show a lot, but it manages to avoid that sense of like, here are three hand puppets and they're going to argue different sides of this debate, right? Like, they stay really well and thoughtfully grounded in who those characters are and what their perspectives would actually be on these issues. And it's something that I find so effective. And even when sometimes the humor can get pretty stupid sounding, a lot of it is not stupid, but like very sitcom-y kinds of joke lines, sometimes performed better than others, you still then get Rita Moreno singing Happy Birthday, which kills me every time. So yeah, no, I am like hopeless in the face of really literally any One Day at a Time episode. But this one I had forgotten about how effective I think it really is. Yeah.
Sarah.
I liked this episode, but I'm not sure I agree that their introduction of all these viewpoints is as seamless. In fact, that did not really work for me. I did feel like it was the puppets. On the other hand, this show is a weird one, at least for me, because it is so sitcom-y in the traditional senses, and yet it's so good at being that, and has such a good ear for how that works with this family's stories, that, like, I, even if it's not for me, I am glad that it exists, and I respect it, that it's really good at what it does, even if what it does is not always my jam. And yeah, Kinsey's like, I taught that to cynical college students who, when I turned the lights back on, people were like, it's dusty in here. Like, fuck yeah, it is. I've now seen it four times and I cry every time. The show really knows what it's doing. And Rita Moreno, national treasure, obviously. But this one, I don't know. I mean, you also have like some bits of business with child actor who is perhaps not as capable as some other people
selling the chocolate.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it is what it is, I guess. Yeah. But
well, in his defense, that was a go nowhere thing too. Like,
well, I mean, the writing of it was fine. He's just not good in the beginning of this season. He's not good. He's a little better at the end. He has a couple good lines in Kinsey's. Yeah, I'm sort of torn. I'm not sure how I'm going to vote. I enjoyed this episode. I thought the jokes worked, even if they were very sitcom-y. Like I said, the show knows how to do that and where the beats are supposed to hit. And occasionally they tweak it. It's not like it's an unimportant issue. I was happy to see Snyder with a shirt off. Fine. But I mean, once you get to the capital I issue, I did kind of feel like we were very specialing it up in a way that wasn't, it was like more successful than its forebears would have been at trying to make it seamless, but not entirely successful. So not sure how it's going to go for me. Dave.
Yeah. I'm not sure how they introduce the, you know, anti-immigration viewpoint a different way that makes it seem more seamless and less, you know, Let's get this red shirt to come in and get shot down. You know, red shirt / red hat, I guess, would be the case in this case.
Yeah. Mm.
So I think it's great we have a TV show that will tackle these subjects on television. When it comes to the canon, like, a one day at a time is always a pretty easy vote for me. And there's always that push and pull. Like, we already have two episodes in. Do we need a third one? But like, the more we put in, the pickier that I'm going to get. And while there is a lot of stuff here that I think is important and great, there's also some stumbling stuff, which we talked about, how, you know, maybe the presentation of all sides, how they bring everybody's viewpoint in is a little clunky. I think if they were to make this in season two, it would have been like an even better episode. And I think this is a good episode, but I'm going to say, with the body of work and that we already have two in, I'm going to probably say that this one is good, but not great. So with that, let's put it to the official vote. Catherine, what say you?
Look, I still vote yes. It's one day at a time. I'm sorry.
Sarah D. Bunting.
For the reasons that you just succinctly stated, while I very much enjoyed this episode, it is a no for me for the canon.
Yeah. And one of those things I forgot to say in my presentation was that there is a very limited U.S. television Canadian joke repertoire. And that scene hit them. And like, I know there's a lot of Canadians working in Hollywood. Get one of them and come up with some new material, please.
Unlearning the metric system was new. I feel like that one I hadn't heard before, but point taken.
Yeah.
Well, but then he steps on the punchline by, like, the thing he ends up saying about a leader makes no sense.
True. Right.
That means kind of a weird no vote, I'm going to say it this week. Unfortunately, that means that One Day at a Time, Season 1, Episode 5, Strays, you're hereby not inducted into the Extra Hot Gray Can.
Guess I know whose names I'm going to be donating to Raices in today.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It is time for Winner and Loser of the Week. Sarah has a winner.
This week's winner is me for two reasons. First of all, Diddy is planning to reboot Making the Band next year. As I tweeted, sometimes you just yell this into the universe expecting no answer. And then the void yelled back. I'm super excited. And as complained about numerous times on this podcast, The Good Fight and Rose Leslie are parting ways. Hallelujah. That character was never great. Her accent always sucked. Bye. Tara, do you want to talk a little bit about why she's leaving?
Oh, well, she is literally a leaver. Her dad is like running for the Brexit party in Britain, and she's going to go work on his campaign. So nuts to all of you, yeah. Dicks.
Wait, is that why she's leaving, or that's what she's doing?
No, but that's what she's going to be doing, okay. She says.
Okay. Mm. Wow. Man. Yeah. Okay. Well, ooh. Good, what a good choice. Luck to you in your future endeavors. And loser of the week?
Well, it's the Game of Thrones showrunners, Benioff and Weiss, who were supposed to go to the final panel for Game of Thrones at Comic-Con, but apparently were trolled out of going. They didn't want to go and get abused. The cast members that did go ended up whining at fans about how they were getting bullied, which, nope, not how bullying works. Can't punch up, learn. I mean, if you're punching up, that's not bullying. You're all rich and famous and gorgeous. Like, shut up. And on top of all that, there was a panel for Preacher that Seth Rogen was at, and they could not stop clowning on what pussies Benioff and Weiss were for not going. And yeah. I don't like Preacher, but I support that. So
it's not that they didn't go. It's that they said they're going to go and then didn't. Like, if they had any sense, they never would agree to in the first place, because
Absolutely. Yes.
They would have got, like, toasted if they went there. Like, there was like a whole contingent of people that like were planning. It was like the Area 51 thing, except it was that. Yeah. And they were just going to boo them every time they came on stage. That was their like plan. And like, it's Comic-Con. You can do that. You know, there's no way they can stop that from happening. So they're not going to show up for that, because the last season did stink. And like, a lot of crazy toxic fans would come to your thing and do that to you. But you had to know that 2 days after your finale hit, not
for sure.
2 days before you were going to speak at Comic-Con.
This
months
is live
later.
Action. Don't read the comments.
Yeah.
Anyways,
speaking about
crazy toxic fans.
Yeah, thank you. Do you know what time it is?
It's game time.
Yeah, sure. Okay, this is the first game of the new season. Starting things off, it's sitcom keyword search from Corey H. Corey,
oh God.
Story, allegory, who earns herself an extra credit. Redeemable for extra credit of her choosing. Okay, here's how it works. IMDb has a search function for keywords. You can also go into any show and see what its plot keywords are. These are supposed to be general enough that they can be used by multiple shows, but sometimes the results are mixed. These are also user-generated keywords, so keep that in mind as we're playing.
Yeah.
All right, so this is going to be a tyranny of the masses sort of game. Can you guess the show using only 5 keywords? If it's your turn, I'm going to read you the list slowly. You jump in when you have a guess, but keep in mind, I'm only going to give you 2 guesses. All right? So you can guess once and get it wrong and still have another guess as I continue to read the clues. Mm. Here's an example. Anybody can shout the answer as soon as they think they know it.
Okay.
Unlikely friendship. Lawyer. Sarcasm. Christian stereotype.
What?
Study group.
Community.
Yes, Community is
hard. Oh, that, yeah.
I made that one particularly hard so we can get to clue five. So if you happen to get it on the first clue, we'll give you 5 points. And then as we go along, each clue reduces the point value by one. All right, there, scorekeeper?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep, got it.
All right, all our steal meals and day points are now reset to zero. Nobody has anything. You all start with a big goose egg, so we don't have to worry about that for this game. The only thing we do have to worry about is who's going first.
We will start with valued guest.
All right, that means Catherine's going first, and then Tara, then Sarah. Are we ready to play sitcom keyword search?
Yes.
I want to be clear, they're all sitcoms.
All sitcoms.
Okay.
Mostly pretty well known. I mean, they're all well known. A lot of them are classics.
So it's not going to be a situation where it's like Transparent, where it's sort of a sitcom, but sort of not.
Quickly scan the list. No, these are all definitely sitcoms.
They're all down the middle sitcoms. Okay.
Absolutely. All right, Catherine, your first clue, balding man. New York City.
Seinfeld?
4 points.
Nice.
Jewish humor. Reference to Superman. Actor shares first name with character. Tara Ariana.
Nice. Yes.
Workplace. Journalism.
News radio.
Famous opening theme. Single woman.
Mary Tyler Moore Show.
Good for two. Sarah D. Bunting. Live audience. Mail carrier.
Cheers.
Nice.
Back to Catherine. Mm. Dysfunctional family. Strapless dress. Wisecrack humor.
Friends?
The color yellow.
What?
Last clue. Beer.
Strapless dress.
Dysfunctional family. Strapless dress. Wisecrack humor. The color yellow. Beer. Gonna need your answer.
Don't know.
Anybody else?
The Simpsons.
Oh, obviously.
Marge's strapless dress. Yeah. Why is that? So as Dan Cassino remarked when I told him about this game, everybody keywords on IMDb, they're all fetishists. So keep that in mind.
Oh, God, no, the color yellow, no.
All right, Tara Ariano.
Yes.
Satire.
Mm-hmm.
British humor.
Mm-hmm.
Friends who hate each other.
Mm-hmm.
Botox.
Oh, absolutely fabulous.
Good for 2 points to Sarah. Romantic tension. Awkward silence. Based on British TV series.
The Office.
Okay. Good for 3.
I'll take it.
Back to our guest. First clue. Crooked businessman. Bad parenting.
Yeah.
Magician. Blue man.
Oh, Arrested Development?
Yeah, it's good for two. Back to Tara. Brother versus brother.
Wings.
Holy shit. That's the first 5 points. Yeah. Wow. Island, lunch counter, airport, et cetera, et cetera. All right. To Sarah. Bromance. Ugh. That tag should be removed.
Bromance.
Bromance.
Okay.
Canadian abroad. Told in flashback. Womanizer. Architect. Read you all those clues once more. Bromance, Canadian abroad, told in flashback, womanizer, architect.
Night court?
Anybody else know that one?
No.
No.
Bromance, Canadian Abroad is Robin, told in flashback. How I Met Your Mother, Womanizer, Barney, Architect is the terrible guy. Ted Mosby.
Christ.
Catherine.
Yeah.
Improvisation. Pixelated nudity.
Okay.
Bleeped dialogue. Fake documentary.
But it's not The Office.
Police station.
Oh, what? I know the show. I can see the show, and they have the police
I'm going to read you the clues again so you have a little time to think about it. Improv. Pixelated.
What is it called?
Nudity. Bleep dialogue. Fake doc. Police station. What's your answer?
It's the show with the P and the hat and the. What is the name of the show?
Sorry.
Reno 911.
Yes.
Tip of your tongue,
couldn't pull
it. Back to Tara. No.
Yes.
Basement.
That 70s show.
Exchange student. Domineering father. Pot smoking, Wisconsin. All right. This will take us into our first score break. Sarah D. Bunting. Shark. Nostalgia. Hardware store.
Home improvement.
Motorcycle.
Happy Days.
Good for two.
Ah.
All right. That is our 12th question. Let's hear the scores.
Okay. Catherine has 6. Sarah has 9. I have 15.
All right. Back to it with Catherine. Neo screwball comedy. Yep. Neo screwball comedy.
Okay.
Love in workplace. Here's a somber tag, but very useful. Death of a cast member.
Death of a cast member. That's different than what I was thinking.
Billionaire. Billionaire. Radio station.
News radio?
Good for 1 point.
Yeah.
Tatara.
Yes.
Roommate. Roommate. Newspaper. Chicago. Cousin.
Perfect Strangers.
2 points. Ensemble cast, Sarah. Ensemble cast. Got it? Got it already?
Yeah.
Flirting. Flirting. Famous opening theme. Neighbor. Coffee house.
Friends. Fuck out of here.
Not really sure why neighbor's in there. It's kind of misleading.
No kidding. Fucking put monkey in there, fetishist.
Really?
All right, Catherine.
Ducklings, hello.
Stand-up comedian.
Mm-hmm.
Catchphrase. Radio DJ.
Frasier.
Oh.
Character name as series title.
Come on!
Oh.
Detroit. Not Seattle. Stand-up comedian, catchphrase, radio DJ, character name, same as series title, Detroit.
Detroit.
I'm not going to be able to get it now.
Anybody have a guess?
No.
Bart Simpson watched this sitcom and told Reverend Lovejoy about it at the dinner table once. Martin.
Yes. Oh.
All right.
Randy.
But. All right, Tara.
Yes.
Troubled past.
Okay.
Karma.
Is it My Name's Earl?
That's good for 4.
Wow.
To Sarah. Feminism.
Murphy Brown.
Office good guess, though. Romance. Friendship. Small town. Government. Feminism. Office romance. Friendship. Small town. Government. Also, may I say, small town government.
Oh, God. What the hell is the name of that thing? I don't know. Sorry.
Catherine knows.
Parks and Rec.
Parks and Rec is
the correct answer. Oh, yeah, that thing.
All right. This is for Catherine. Brother-brother relationship. Single father. New York City. Interracial adoption. And for some reason, the fifth clue is missing here, so I'm going to come up with one on the fly. Molestation.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God.
Picky gave you guys each other's clues, I think.
Brother-brother relationship, so single father, New York City.
I'm tight. I know what this show
talk
is.
Talk it through.
I don't.
Give yourself some clues.
Yeah. No,
do it in a monotone.
It's
that
an
might
old.
Help.
No, please tell me the name of it.
Sarah.
Different strokes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I apologize for that fifth clue, but that's what popped in my head. Okay, Tara Ariano. Working women.
Mm-hmm.
New York.
Oh, great. Mm-hmm.
Sketch comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Behind the scenes.
Mm. Oh, 30 Rock?
I'm going to give you that one for 4 points. General Electric was the last clue.
Four. I think that's only three.
I mean, 1 point. 2 points. Sorry. That was the fourth question is what I meant.
Okay.
Fourth question, 2 points.
Got it.
For Sarah D. Bunting. Junior high school. Strict father.
Wonder Years?
Yay!
4 points. All right, Catherine.
Never watched it. Yay!
So this is before my time, so definitely before your time.
Cool.
But still known quantity, so I mean entity. Urban setting.
Okay.
All right, here's a good one. Based on a magazine article.
Oh.
Driver.
Taxi?
Hey!
3 points. Yes. Based on a magazine article. I did not know that either. I mean, it doesn't mean it's true. I guess it's only a tag, but here we go. Tara, coming of age. Keep in mind, Wonder Years already said. Boy with glasses.
The Goldbergs?
Diner. Brother-sister relationship. And once again, IMDb, not me, black comedy.
Diner.
Coming of age, boy with glasses, diner, brother-sister relationship, black comedy.
I don't know.
That's What's Happening.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
All right, this is our last question before our second score break. The game is winding down. Sarah D. Bunting, California. Yes. California. Interracial relationship. Fantasy sequence. Janitor.
Crazy Ex-Girlfriend?
Hospital.
Scrubs
for a point. And let's hear the scores, please, Tara Ariano.
Okay, Catherine has 10, Sarah has 15, I have 23.
Okay. Anybody's game? All right, everybody's got two questions left.
Sitcoms are lucky I have any points.
Catherine.
Better be a Benson question here, Beaches.
Benson is not in the game, I'll give you that.
No!
All right, here you go, Catherine. Apartment. That's a decent clue.
Yep.
Doorman.
Uh-huh.
Nouveau riche.
Oh, there was a revival of it on the TV. And it wasn't All in the Family. It was the other one.
Called?
And here's the other one with the...
Maid.
I know what the show is.
I know, but I got to keep going with the clues or it's unfair scoring-wise. Dry cleaner.
Uh-huh.
All right. Once again, apartment, doorman, nouveau riche, maid, dry cleaner. Maybe you could sing the song. It would help.
No, but I know that Jennifer Hudson sang the song.
Oh, my sure God. Did.
But the name of the show is not in the song.
No.
Okay, I got to call that one. I felt bad for you. The Jeffersons.
Oh, yeah.
All right, Tara. Ensemble cast. Remarriage.
Brady Bunch.
Good guess. Incorrect. Adoption. Gay relationship.
Modern Family.
And the last one, big breasts.
Oh, no!
Fetishes. Now I like them.
I think we should do another version of this game where we just pick just the fetish ones out of all
just the horny ones. Yeah, this is why when you got to Boy in Glasses, I was like, no.
All right, listeners, get on it. Horn Dog IMDb game. Let's make it happen. All right, back to Sarah.
We should do a really filthy one just for the Patreon.
Yeah.
Assistant District Attorney.
What?
Remember, sitcom.
Uh-huh.
Vietnam War veteran.
Night Court.
Yay!
Jazz courtroom prostitution.
Oh, all right. Jazz.
All right, everybody's last question. Here we go. Starting with Catherine. Miss Fortune.
Mm-hmm.
Vulgarity. These are terrible clues. Man with glasses.
What? Miss Fortune, vulgarity.
Celebrity. And maybe the only
with Larry David my problem with this with Game Time is
do you mean
my
Jeffersons?
Yeah, I do mean Jefferson.
Last clue is actor playing himself.
Yeah. Curb Your Enthusiasm.
There you go.
Nice. Yeah.
All right. Did you say that before I gave the last clue? Was I talking?
I knew it, but I didn't say it.
1 point then. Tara, your last question.
Yep.
Famous theme. Female friendship.
Laverne and Shirley.
Southern accent.
Designing Women.
Casual sex.
Golden Girls.
Yeah, I'm out, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I guess you gave it to that ding ding is for Sarah who said Golden Girls.
Sarah got it.
Yes.
Good job, Sarah.
Those were good guesses based on the tags you were given.
Yeah, for sure.
Last clue: cheesecake.
No, sure.
All right. Here's our last question of the game. It is for Sarah D. Bunting. Professor. Frozen yogurt.
Oh, I think I'm going to know this one to be mad. Keep going.
Ethics.
Good place.
Good place.
Yeah.
Good for 3 points. Okay, that is the regulation game. Let's hear the scores, please, Tara Ariano.
Well, Catherine got 11 points.
Yes,
Sarah
I did.
Got 22 points, lucky number, and I finished with 25.
All right. Well, that ended up closer than I thought it was going to, based on our second scoreboard. Before we send us off, let's repurpose our tiebreaker for our first steel meal of the season.
All right.
I will start reading all the keywords. As soon as you think you know the show, you shout it out. First person to shout out the correct show wins the steel meal. Are you ready?
Yes.
Here we go. Overachiever. Type A. Sensitive male.
New girl.
Boss-employee relationship.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine?
Yes. Wow.
Hey.
We didn't even get to the ones that are really... Roof, Tough Female, Foodie, Father Figure, Yogurt, New York City, Break Room, Bullpen, Gay Cop, Vulture, Latina Cop. Where were the rest of your clues? All right, Tara, you won the steel mill and you win today's game.
Tara.
Congratulations, Tara.
Woo.
All right, guys, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We investigated the explosive fourth season of Veronica Mars before going around the dial with stops at Frankenstein's Monsters, Monster Frankenstein, Jane the Virgin, Last Chance You, and what did I do? Because I didn't put it in my notes. Whatever I did.
Stuff. Baruch.
Yes.
Yeah.
We answered Leanna's call to give deserving characters their own theme song, and Tara made the unsuccessful case for One Day at a Time's Strays for the Canon. We crowned winner and losers of the week, and Tara was the winner of this week's keyword game time. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
in these shoes,
Sarah D. Bunting,
go Pirates,
and Catherine Van Arendonk, right here on Extra Hot Great.
Go on. Get! This is my alone time.